now Phil Hendry. 1-800-449-8686.
Yes, this is Harvey Wireman, one of the many characters that Phil Hendry does on his radio broadcast. People can't believe that other people would call in thinking they're talking to a real human being and not Phil Hendry doing a character. But it's true. So, I gotta go.
1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show. Boy, what a weird couple of weeks. Weird and tragic. A mother of three kills her children and herself in a murder-suicide in Jacksonville, North Carolina. You heard about what happened, of course, in Houston, the woman drowning her children. And then a father, apparently, responsible for killing his kids. The legal... Where's the story, Mike, on the guy, on the father? Oh, okay. Police finally shot a man after he stabbed his three young sons, killing two of them, as their mother watched. This was in Syracuse, New York. Like, really sad stuff. Roland Schwinn is the headmaster of Manor Academy that's in Dana Point, which is a rather exclusive school, and we appreciate you being on with us, Mr. Schwinn, to talk about it and to talk about how we can prevent this phenomenon. And a lot of it, I guess, has to do with summer months and other things, correct?
Indeed, Phil. I don't think there's been a better time for year than now for year-round schooling. And I think that with these very tragic circumstances, the deaths, the murders of these children, the question really needs to be asked, has there ever been a better time for year-round schooling? The longer children stay in school and away from their parents, the better their chances are of staying alive until Labor Day.
Well, why? Okay. This has to do with parents and the proximity of children in the home?
Yes.
How so?
Well, a parent's inclination to kill a child is partially born from a sense that they may not be getting a return on their investment. Now, you spend almost $250,000 on raising children from birth to the year 18. June rolls around. You get, and believe me, Phil, I've seen this with parents that I've spoken with. June will roll around, and you get a look at the report cards from the preceding school year, and what are you looking at? If the grades are good,
right,
you see a child who you begin thinking that perhaps is achieving more than you, and you become jealous.
If the kid's grades are good, the parent becomes jealous.
Many do, yes. And if the grades are bad, then you begin thinking you're being taken for a ride.
And by ride, what do you mean?
You're spending, I know, at Manor Academy, the average tuition is $9,000 a year.
That's in a private school.
Yes. You spend that kind of money on a kid and he comes home with bad grades, you think someone's taking you for a joyride. And it's not anything that I think parents suffer very, very well.
All right, what does all of this have to do with summer vacation, though?
Well, when you couple all of that with the fact that they are in your face for 3 months straight, that's like putting a match to a can of gasoline. So the summer months, Phil, become the American version of Cambodia's killing fields without all of the historical romance.
So parents are killing their kids not from depression or postnatal baby blues or a simple psychosis?
No, parents are killing their children because more and more they get... what raising a child is all about, a very large expenditure of money, loss of freedom, the possibility of being socially lower than them when they do succeed, or you're being taken for a ride. In my own life, and I've been an educator for 30 years, I have...
Let me interrupt you. It's hard for me to imagine a parent looking at a kid's report card and thinking the kid is taking them for a ride, which basically says the kid's getting bad grades on purpose just to see how much money they can suck out of mom and dad for an education.
That is the thinking, yes.
No, but do you think the kids are doing that?
No, I don't think the children are doing that. I think when you put out that kind of money, you want to see some return on the investment.
But when the kid comes home with good grades, then the parent's jealous.
Yes, many parents are jealous. Let me give you an example, Phil, from my... experience.
See, that sounds weird.
Let me give you an example from my experience. I have a mid-level administrative job at a variety of schools. Now here comes my son, who got a job in a medical research department at UCLA, he has a chance to make some real strides. And when I heard about this, I have to tell you, it sort of pissed me off.
That you had been a mid-level educator, administrator?
Mid-level administrator education. My son works in the research department. Why was I slaving at this dead-end job while my son is poised to tear it up in higher education, and I had to deal with this?
Well, you're telling me then you thought of killing your own son?
I'm not saying I thought of killing him, but when it got bad, I remember driving. I'll tell you where I was. It was about 2 years ago. He had gotten this job at UCLA. I was driving toward the beach, and I remember, Phil, as if it was yesterday, my hand on the door handle. And I was speeding toward a bend in the road. And below that bend was a good 500-foot drop until you hit a dry river bottom. And I still remember thinking, you can open the door, you can jump out, and he goes sailing over the side.
You thought of killing your own son that way.
I felt that, and thank God I didn't act on it.
But you were thinking about opening the door and jumping out of your own car? I mean...
Phil, I'm telling you what I felt, and thank God, because it isn't the kid's fault. It was my inability to deal with his success.
Roland Schwinn is an educator, if you'll pardon me for a moment, Roland.
Certainly.
He's an educator, and he says that one of the reasons why kids are getting killed is it's the summertime, there's a lot of proximity between parent and kid, and the parent is reminded of how much money they're spending on the kid. And it's making them kill their kids, is essentially what you're saying.
Yes. Yes, in some cases, yes it is.
Let's take these specific cases. The woman who drowns all five of her kids, the man who stabbed his kids, and the woman who killed herself and her kids.
Yes.
These parents, you're telling me... School's out, summer vacation.
Kids up in your face for 3 months. You looked at a report card that was bad. You looked at a report card that was good. You see that the kid may be more successful. You see that the kid's taking you financially for a ride. I'm telling you, I thought about leaping out of my own car.
And sending your kid to a fiery death over a cliff.
That is exactly right.
Well, you mentioned being taken for a ride. Is that the other side of it, Roland, being taken for a ride?
Yeah, my daughter's a great example of that. We sent her to private school. We paid for tutors. We paid for extra classes. I got to look at a report card, and there she is pulling a 2-0, and I suddenly realize she was taking me for a joyride, spending my money, hanging on the phone, going out with her girlfriends, or this guy she knows who has a motorcycle, and I thought about just a little tap with a crescent wrench.
A tap with a crescent wrench.
Yeah, I was unclogging a drain in her bathroom. And I remember she was standing there with her back to me. And I remember thinking, just a tap. And my problems...
But it's none of these kids' fault.
That is correct.
1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. A unique view into children, education, and perhaps domestic violence with Roland Schwinn, who's the headmaster of a private school in Dana Point. And he himself has admitted to having these feelings toward his kids that, well, it's summertime, they're in my face, it's summertime, they got bad grades, they got good grades, why am I spending my money, why are they taking me for a ride? This is something, I wanted to ask you something. The kid who does well because of the jealous parent, okay, how do you save them? How do you protect them?
Well, I think, Phil, it keeps the child from overachieving. It keeps the child overachieving out of your face, and it's a lot better than them constantly being there. The bottom line is parents and kids are spending too much time together.
That's what you think.
That is correct.
It used to be, Mr. Schwinn, it used to be that they complained because parents and kids weren't spending enough time together.
That's correct. And now they're finding out that that's an invitation to horror. I've never been a big fan of Bush and his family value crusade, and I never will be, because all that togetherness is making the parents jealous, suffocated, angry, and they feel cheated.
What is the message for kids?
Well, I think the message for children is two things. Do well in school, otherwise your parents are going to get the idea that you're taking them for a ride, and they'll get angry. And then if you do well, stop with running through the door, waving the report card of their test. And saying, look at what I did. Look at how good I am. Because that pisses parents off, too. And there's a little poem that you can recite to yourself if you get angry. And you as a parent, when a child runs through the door... And
certainly children are going to run through the door with a good report card.
Absolutely. And it pisses, and I know it could piss off a parent.
It's difficult for me to imagine a parent that gets angry at a kid with a good report card, but they're jealous.
They're jealous, yes. Roses are red, violets are blue. What am I mad about? And just like that, your anger has dissipated. But let's keep working for year-round schools. I believe it'll save lives.
All right, headmaster of the Banner Academy in Dana Point, Roland Schwinn. Kids are dying. They're being murdered by their parents because they're doing either too well or too poorly in school. And it's summertime, and they're up in their parents' faces, and nobody can deal with anybody. I can understand maybe a parent getting upset with a kid who brings home a bad report card, but bringing home a good report card, one would think a parent would be overjoyed with. Mr. Schwinn says that makes a parent jealous. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686.
With Roland Schwinn, the headmaster of Manor Academy, we're talking about these children being murdered by their parents this summer. Are you saying that year-round... Let me ask you this, Mr. Schwinn. Are you the headmaster of a year-round school?
Yes, I am.
Manor Academy's year-round?
Yes, it is.
So obviously, if for instance, I were to put my kids, or not me, but somebody were to put their kids in your school year-round, what are you saying?
What am I saying? I'm saying they get a phenomenal education, and the possibility that some harm would befall those children would be eliminated. And so, yes, I suppose that if they put their children, for instance, in our school, you would not be tempted to murder your children, and I'm not saying that you would. But let's say you wanted to murder your children, then it would be less likely.
Less likely to murder the kids?
Because they're in a year-round school and they are not there underfoot.
All right, this sounds like it's the parents that got the problem.
Oh, they definitely have the problem. I'm trying to save the lives of children from being... I almost killed my own son by driving him off a cliff, so I can relate to this kind of pressure.
Okay, 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show here with Pat. You're on the air. Go ahead, Pat.
Yes, this schoolmaster here. Anyone who would send their children to his school would have to be out of their minds. The man should be arrested.
Do you know anything about our school?
I know that I'm listening to you talking about you wanted to kill your son and you wanted to kill your daughter. I never heard of such nonsense.
I'm saying that in some families, I never did obviously kill my son or my daughter.
Of course not.
I'm saying in some families, it is understandable what with children home for 3 months, the pressures that parents put themselves under, not the children doing it, but suddenly the parent, do you have children? Let's start at the beginning. Do you have children?
Yes. And I...
Well, do you have them now, or are you a grandmother?
Excuse me, yes, I'm a grandmother.
All right. Didn't you ever get jealous of a child who brought home
a... Never in a million years. I'm proud that my children have been educated.
You never
They're
got
doing
jealous.
Much better than we ever did.
You never got jealous.
Why?
They're going to do better than you could ever do.
I raised them to be better than
let me ask her, Pat. This is Phil Hendry. Did you ever feel like your kids were taking you for a joyride if they were spending your money on tuition and not getting good grades?
My God! Well, first of all, nobody's forced to do that. You do that because you want your children to have a good education. And I'll tell you one thing, they would never go to that gentleman's school, and the term loosely.
Excuse me, but you know nothing of our school. Nothing.
I know nothing about school?
You know nothing of our school, and you certainly can't make that comment.
I don't have to know anything about your school.
We were in the Bentley 300 as one of the top 300 private schools, K-12, in America.
But listening to you mouth off about parents being jealous of their kids, 3 months of summer vacation isn't something that was just invented. It's been going on since the year one.
But suddenly they're getting jealous because things are better now.
No, I'm sorry. You're mistaken.
They know their kids are going to go to Mars and places like that they've never been. And they get jealous.
And want to drive their kids off a cliff?
No way.
In my
case,
I was tempted.
This man is out of his mind.
Is the name Pat, correct?
Yes.
Do you know that your children could go to Mars or to some other planet? You'll
Isn't that wonderful?
You'll never get to do that. That doesn't.
Do I care? Do I want to go to Mars? My God, I'm still on a rotary telephone here.
Well, I would suggest you get into the 20th century, and then
No. I think you need to learn a few things.
You've never wanted to go to Mars.
Why?
To travel to another planet.
Well, when you say going to Mars, Mr. Schwinn, are you talking about just the...
The natural progression of our society. Pat doesn't seem to want to be a part of that. And I'm saying that her children someday will go to Pluto.
No, you're wrong. I would be very happy if things got that far and my children could
You never looked at your kid with his great grades, his hot girlfriend, his new bike, and then you looked at your own life.
I would never even consider
And then you look at your own life and you're staring into a black hole and that didn't
matter. I'm not staring into a black hole.
You don't know this woman's life.
Compared to her children, you never thought about taking your belt and placing it around your kid's neck?
Never, never. We don't believe in hitting our
children. I'm just talking about thinking about it. I didn't say do it.
Well, this is the thing that I'm getting. You're saying that the fantasy of killing your kid exists because you're jealous of them, because you feel like...
No, he's out of his mind.
Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that it is normal.
Let's talk about a father who
normal?
Actually...
You think that's normal?
That's not normal.
These people that killed all these kids are normal?
No. I'm saying it's something that we're failing as parents when we want to kill our children. That's what I'm saying.
No kidding.
No way.
Well,
I'm sorry.
Well, we are failing as parents if we're killing our kids. Yes, we're failing as parents.
Well, Pat doesn't agree
with that. Them, I think they should put us away.
If you killed your children, would you feel you'd failed as a parent?
I wouldn't even consider killing a child, my own.
But if you did, if, for instance, one day you put Drano in their pudding snacks, which my wife told me she thought about doing once, you wouldn't feel as if...
Your wife? You know, it's one thing for you to know your own impulses and have control of them. Your wife is fantasizing about putting Drano in their pudding snacks.
Didn't think of it before, they will now.
That's the danger here, Mr. Schwinn.
Absolutely, that's the danger.
Well, what is
your... Thinking about killing your kids because they're smart?
I'm telling you that there is no coincidence with the fact that the children are now out of school and they're dropping like flies.
That's not because they're out of school.
Well,
that's what happened because these people are out of their minds.
It's coincident. In other words, the school shootings, when did they take place? During the school year. Duh. The kids are at school, they're pissed off, they shot people.
Duh! How do they get out of their homes with guns?
That's the bigger question.
Where are their parents?
The parents, that's a good question. But we know where these parents are, don't we? They're at the other end of a can of Drano.
They should be in jail.
All right, Pat.
Then you do agree they should go to jail.
The parents.
Yes.
These people that have killed their children, yes.
75% of all child deaths by parents happen during the summer. We have to take a look at this. Put your children in Manor Academy year-round. Save the life of your child.
My children to go to school.
Put them in Manor
Academy.
9 months
out of the year, and the other 3 months they would be home with me. Grandchildren.
Home with you. So that you can just conveniently fool with the brakes on the car.
I couldn't. God, that's what you do.
That was your idea. I never fooled with the brakes.
No, but you had your hand on the handle of the car.
Not only that, you were going to jump out, let him go over by himself. That's great. You're a wonderful educator. I must say, I have gotten an education tonight.
Pat, thank you very much.
I think you misrepresented me.
Thank you. 1-800-449-8686. Mr. Schwinn says that the kids are dying during the summer, being murdered by their parents because the parents think they're being taken for a joyride, paying all that tuition for bad grades. Phil Hendry Show, coming back.
And now, Phil Hendry.
Mr. Hendry, you mentioned that one of your eldest had a little bit of a crush on the vacation.
Our eldest son met a girl on the ship and had a little bit of a, yeah, they had an infatuation.
Let me ask you, did that make you jealous?
Jealous of what?
That he is a young boy and the first blush of romance he's experiencing for the first time.
No, I thought, you know, isn't that cool? He's going through what I went through when I was 15, and I wasn't jealous of him, no. I mean, I guess...
Didn't it make you want to return to those days?
To be 15 again? Sure. I mean, it would be cool to be 15 again.
Well, this is one of the dynamics we're talking about. What we are teaching a lot of our parents who are stressed out and feel violent toward their children, many men... What do they do when their own son is getting more ass than they are? And I'm using the crude appellation.
Yeah, your language is very crude.
I'm sorry, but I'm doing that for a purpose, to drive home the emotional aspect of this. How old were you before you got your first piece of ass?
I really would rather you not use language like that, okay?
How? Just go with me, Phil. How old were you when you got your first piece of ass?
I really would rather you not use language like that, and for an educator, it's unbelievable.
I'm trying to get to the emotion core. How old were you when you got your first piece of ass?
You love saying that word, don't you?
Will you answer me?
I was 19.
Jesus.
Well, what is that supposed to mean?
A little old?
Isn't that a little old? That's how old I was. I don't care. I'm not being, I got nothing to prove to you.
All right. And here's your son, at the age of 15, getting more ass than a rental car. And you don't want to dispose of this lifeless body?
No, I don't. And I think it's a crying shame that you...
That I give you the truth.
That you give me the truth. That you think you're reading the psychology of parents?
Yes.
If my kid winds up having a sexual encounter with this girl that he met, I can only hope that he does what I asked him to do, which is A, condom, B, don't do it.
A, condom, and B, don't do it.
Yeah, those two things I told him. I said, don't do it, dude, not while you're young, but if you're gonna, put the rubber on. That's what I said, and there you go. Here is Barbara, or hold on, Barbara, for just a second. I got to go over here to David on the Phil Hendry Show. Hello?
Hey, what's up, man?
Yes, sir.
First of all, I want to tell this meathead on the phone, maybe if he'd have gotten
meathead.
A piece of ass before now, except maybe one that you blow up, he wouldn't be quite the way he is.
Well,
the Manson family, my children, that put him in your private school.
I beg your pardon?
You, sir, are an idiot.
I beg your pardon?
I would just as soon have the Manson family homeschool my kids as to let you look after them.
Well,
you, sir, are a complete idiot.
Well, it takes one to know one. You know?
Yeah. How many kids you got?
How many kids do you have?
I have three, sir.
Do you have three?
I have a five-year-old that's smarter than you.
Have they ever been to school?
I have a five-year-old smarter than you.
Do you plan on sending them to school?
Yes, I do, sir.
You do? Is the five-year-old in kindergarten?
Yes, she is.
All right.
She probably has a higher IQ.
And you're telling me they're not driving? You know, all of your insults, sir, are very boring. If we could stick to this, they're really boring.
Here you are, somebody when he got his first piece of ass. What an idiot for an educator to come across like that, you know, and you're sitting here talking about your daughter's grades being good enough that you want
to
whack her with a wrench or jump out of your car
because
your son was smarter than you are. You, sir, are a pathetic loser.
No, sir, I am saying this is...
And I hope to God that somebody, wherever it is that you teach, maybe it's on Mars, you know, you talk about how much you want to go to Mars... My kid wouldn't go to Mars because he'd probably meet someone related to you.
Well, perhaps your kid won't go to Mars because he'll never be smart enough to be chosen.
Well, and if he was, he'd probably meet your mother because you are an idiot.
Oh, so now it's my mother.
Yes.
Your intellect stoops to the level of attaching my mother. I think your mother probably wanted to hit you with a monkey wrench. This explains the increase in child murders during the summer because parents like you can't keep your hands off.
If you came from my loins, the first thing I'd do is punch your mother.
You'd punch my mother.
Yes,
you know what?
If you came from my loins,
you know
there's no way you came from me.
Well, you know something? I did punch your mother because I'm your father.
All right, okay, stupid rednecks. Here is Barbara on the Phil Hendry Show. Hello.
Hi.
Yes, hi.
I just want to put my 2 cents worth in. I've never called a radio show before. But
well,
I really have to respond to this man.
Thank you for calling
I think...
Me.
I think he should see a doctor. I think the man is sick.
I've had
agree
a
with
physical.
Everyone that he is certainly should not be in the educational field or anywhere near children.
May I ask you a question, madam?
Yes.
And I want you to understand I'm asking this to get the pure emotional response.
Yeah.
When was your first piece of ass?
Okay, that is uncalled for, especially to a lady.
You
all right?
Are really sick. You should see a doctor. You are really
Madam,
sick.
I
and you know what?
Physical.
I'd take my
I
wife with me if I were you.
I
because you are not fit to be parents. You're a threat to your children. Anyone who is jealous of their children's success, you should
right.
be happy for
who,
them.
Who are these parents that are? Yeah, who are these parents that are jealous? And you're talking about a kid.
I would ask this lady, but she'd probably hang up because I know
what her
problem
gonna...
is. Your daughter's breasts are bigger than yours, aren't they? You see, this is...
Why is it personal with you? Why is it sexual with you?
Are you just on this program to instigate?
No, ma'am, I am telling you
because
as the
I
headmaster
feel
as
though,
of a school.
You know something?
As the headmaster
it's almost like you are a joke.
Well,
you
no,
are not for real. You're really a joke.
So you think the murder of children is a joke? We've had five dead
I think
in
when you comment about the mother, the murder of your own children, then they,
you
you're the
funny.
Joke.
I
you're
am
the
simply
joke.
Saying that I was tempted to push my son out of a moving car. Yes.
Well, that's sick. That is very sick, sir.
But you
don't have to be a psychiatrist to realize that's sick.
I can ask you, but you wouldn't answer my question. Are your daughter's breasts bigger than you?
Don't
that's
answer
none
that.
None of your business.
Don't answer that, Barbara.
That's none of your
none
business.
None of my business, and yet you say you're not jealous of your daughter. Even to the point where you
I'm
might give
proud.
Her...
I have two daughters, and I am very, very proud of them.
Even to the point
I'm
where...
I'm proud to the point I'm sickening when I talk about them.
And when I am...
I'm so proud.
And you wouldn't want to give one of them a tap with a crescent wrench?
Oh, my God. No, I guess I wouldn't. No.
God. So are you telling me that...
You know, I have never called a program before... But you are so infuriating and so...
You know, I was willing to go along with this, Mr. Schwinn, until this whole thing about when was your first piece of ass. And all of this crudity.
I apologize to the lady, but I had to get to the emotional core of her response. I know a man who had his son circumcised multiple times because he felt the child would grow up to have a longer penis.
You're kidding me.
No.
What doctor would agree to do that, and is he still walking around free?
I don't know. He
you know, I don't
do.
Believe this man.
This
he's
guy
really
is a fruitcase. An utter, pathetic fruitcase.
So I guess I'm not going to get an answer to that breast question.
No, you're not.
No,
I won't let her.
Me,
I won't let the lady
none
answer.
Of your business, and it's a stupid question.
I have been.
With.
I just want to know if there's jealousy.
She's already answered that.
What, would you let me speak with the woman, sir?
No, I'm not going to allow this lady to lower herself to answer your stupid question. She already answered the question. Is she proud of her children? She said many times, yes, she is.
So they're not like maybe a 38 double D?
Okay.
I'll tell you, it really is so unreal. I can't
Hello?
Have a feeling that it's this has just been contrived.
Are you full of crap, Mr. Schwinn?
Am I full of crap? And you're the guy that didn't want me using ass.
Are you full of crap?
Five children were drowned by their mother in Houston. You find that funny? I don't.
I don't even know
All
how
right,
you can
Barbara.
Equate any of that
All right,
to what you're talking about.
Thank you for your call.
I'll bet you her daughter's breasts are perkier than hers.
And so, in other words, she's jealous of that, and she wants to kill her kid.
A little tap.
With a crescent wrench. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show.
The Phil Hendry Show is back.
Well, hi, everybody, from beautiful Dodger Stadium. This is our very special track and field meet. Today we feature a special exhibition track meet. And I'm Ross Porter.
I'm Rick Mundy.
And today the highlight of our big track meet, a 100-meter dash, actually, Rick, featuring guys with pacemakers and bad hearts. I think it'd be a lot of fun to see if these guys can make it. As you know, Dick Cheney just had a heart attack, one of many. We spoke with him before today's race, and we wanted to ask Dick about what he felt about being in a 100-yard dash with a bum heart.
Well, I just think that it'll be a lot of fun. And I'm going to do everything that I can to do the best that I can in this race, although I don't see the sense of sticking me out there with a bad heart.
Well, there was just moments ago, and that was Dick Cheney. The guy's got a pacemaker, so we thought it would be fun. We thought it would be kind of wild. And we hope you agree with us to see if we couldn't collect some of the worst heart attack cases in all of the world and make them run 100 meters. And today, of course, the race will feature not only in lane one, Dick Cheney, just had a pacemaker put in with a long history of heart problems. In lane number two, David Letterman. He's got a bad ticker, and it runs in the family, if you'll pardon the pun.
That's pretty good, it runs in the family.
It does run in the family. In lane number three, Larry King. He's had about 9 heart attacks or whatever the hell, I don't know. Over there in lane four, Richard Pryor. He's in a wheelchair from MS, and he has a bad heart. So good luck to him.
Jesus.
In lane five, Regis Philbin. He had a couple of heart attacks back there. Lane six, another guy that had a heart attack. He's going to be running in today's 100-meter race, Mike Ditka, and he's got a bad temper.
So the bad temper and the heart.
It could go out on him any minute. It's going to be fun. In lane seven, another football coach, Dan Reeves, coach of the Atlanta Falcons. He's doing all those commercials for Bear Aspirin. Yeah, rot's a ruck, pal. He had a heart attack. And in lane eight, after suffering a heart attack back in October, Henry Kissinger. So let's see how these guys do running a 100-meter dash.
And by the way, our broadcast today is being catered by one of the great local restaurants, Art's Meat Shed. Yes, we're here in the booth eating... We're here in the booth eating this gravy-laden steaks with buttery lobster, mashed potatoes with sour cream and butter, tall glasses of whole vitamin D milk.
And we also have buttered rolls, clam chowder, asparagus smothered in hollandaise sauce, and for dessert, a 7-layer German chocolate cake, coffee with a dollop of whipped cream and a shot of Bailey's.
So, that sounds pretty good. Let's watch this race, a 100-meter dash, while we shovel in hollandaise sauce of guys who've had a heart attack. And let's see. There they go. No, they don't. They all died. They're all,
Yeah, it looked like they all just collapsed.
You heard the starter pistol. And let's run that back so our fans can hear what we just said. They were all lined up.
They're bad off.
And now they're collapsed. Let's hear it again. And there they go. No, they're all dead. So there was our replay.
So apparently the gunshot...
I guess it just sort of shocked him.
Shocked the hell out of him, and, well, that's too bad. By the way, Candy Crowley had the starter pistol. Candy, of course, hasn't seen a box of C's that she didn't like.
Okay, Ross Porter just got shot. So anyway, folks, our big... that's the end of that. So all of them are dead. So by the way, David Letterman, even though he had a heart attack at the start of the race, he wins the 100-meter dash because he's taller than the rest of them and just collapsed further down the track. That's all I can tell you. This 100-meter race between guys who've had heart attacks has been brought to you by Marlboro Cigarettes, light up and drag deep. And by the Dairy Farmers Association of America, who reminds you that big bricks of cheddar cheese with a jar of mayonnaise make for a great snack. And by Barca Lounger, why do any exercise when you can lay on your ass all day in a Barca Lounger? And by Krispy Kreme Donuts, no, they're not bad for you at all. Where'd you hear that? Thanks again, the winner, even though he's dead, David Letterman. Bye.
When I meet the great Mickey Mouse, it is like getting communion from the Pope.
Oh, well, Mickey Mouse is a figure. I mean, character.
No, but he's a what?
Walt, Mickey Mouse is Walt Disney's main character, but and all the characters there at Disneyland are liked by children all over the world, adults too.
Right.
But I don't think anyone should go to extremes of bringing garlands there to hang around statues and stuff to that extreme.
You have never burned incense or anything like that?
Oh, I've never went that far. I'm not that crazy.
That's the second time you've questioned my sanity, so I guess you're going to think this is crazy. Phil, in 1951, Walt Disney created I don't even want to say it because...
Well, go ahead.
Walt Disney tried to help the health situation by creating the rubber. Now, the rubber was...
The rubber? You mean the prophylactic?
That is correct, yes.
I don't...
Okay.
You know.
Okay. Ray? Now, you know, you sound like you might have been in the Navy.
No, I've never been in the Navy.
All right, well, you know how our boys... You know the disease, if it wasn't for Walt Disney getting hit on by all those women to the point where he had to create a rubber for himself, and now everybody uses it, see? Let me ask you something.
Well, I mean, I'm not disputing Walt Disney wasn't a smart man. Walt Disney's done a lot of stuff.
Have you ever brought a retard to Disney? Some people.
No, all right, the GD and all the retard, I don't want to hear it, okay?
Well, some people actually have the balls to bring one of these mongoloid kids up to Mr. Mouse and get a picture taken. I don't like that. Scares the mouse, scares me.
What's wrong with a...
When I see the Mickey, I say, oh, Mickey, thank you. It's a great honor to be in your presence. I'm Vernon from Florida. Please cast your gaze upon me. But I never look the mouse in the eye, Ray, and so many people... Have you done that?
Yeah, I've been to the park.
No, but have you looked the mouse in the eye?
What is with this mouse?
What am I going to look at? Some outfit somebody's got on that's looking through the mouth? I mean, what do you mean look him in the eyes? You can't see the guy's eyes.
I'm asking you, have you ever had the disrespect to stare Mickey Mouse down?
I've had my children's photos made with all the characters, every one of them.
Is that what you're talking about, have the pictures?
No, I'm asking both you guys, have you ever had the brass balls to look Mickey Mouse in the eye? Ray? You first.
I haven't looked. What? I don't even understand where you're coming from.
What are you talking about?
I'm saying
you're taking this character business a little too far.
The rubber was modeled after Mickey. You know that the rubber that we wear, the condom we wear, was modeled after Mickey Mouse's nose.
I think you're just pulling everybody.
You know something? I think.
Down,
yeah.
Man.
You know what? I think now you're full of crap,
Mr. Henry.
Yeah,
you think
yeah,
I'm all right? If you think I'm full of crap, then you call this number, and I will give it on the air right now. We are talking about. It really makes me angry that one of the greatest institutions in the history of America is being disrespected.
I don't think Disney World's being disrespected.
Oh, bull crap. Look at the profile.
People come from all over the world to go to Disney World.
I'm going
to
ask you.
To Disney World, you see people from every
yes, but they never introduce themselves to Mickey Mouse, and they never bring garlands of flowers for the statue. If you look at a profile shot of Mickey Mouse, a silhouette profile, okay? Tell me that doesn't look like a penis. And all that.
See, you're the guy with the penis.
That close to
well,
my mind don't wander in them crazy places. But if you look at everybody that comes out of Disney Park with a Disney T-shirts on, Mickey
yeah,
Mouse
turn,
T-shirts,
all right, there you go.
They buy all this stuff. I mean, you can't sit there and tell somebody disrespects these characters. That's nonsense.
All I'm asking either one of you gentlemen to do is take a Mickey Mouse T-shirt with his picture on it, turn it upside down, and if that doesn't look like two balls and a penis.
Now, Phil Hendry.
Among some of the dumber commentary around the case of the missing girl in Utah, Elizabeth Smart, have been the comments concerning the visibility or lack thereof of the mother of Elizabeth Smart. Why isn't she on TV making comments to the press? Why isn't she? Because the woman's in a state of shock. Are you stupid? Now, I have seen the father, and I have seen the aunt, and I have seen the uncle, and they've been designated as the spokespeople for the family. I think I've seen one or two other people talking on television to talk about this girl, but the mother isn't on television because she's obviously in, and you may ask, well, why isn't the father? I don't know. That's just kind of the way it is sometimes in families. That's sort of the dynamic. The mother, given the connection that mothers have to their children, it has a lot to do with the fact that they were carrying them for 9 months of their lives, giving a part of their life to them. You know, they take it in that instance a little bit tougher, or maybe they just emotionally they're not as well equipped to deal with the separation as a man is in that one particular instance. I don't know, but you know, give her a break.
Yeah, I haven't seen the mother on TV. Do you think she cares?
No, she doesn't, man. You're right. Well, gee, how astute. Margaret Gray is joining us. She's a nationally syndicated columnist, and in fact, Margaret has written A Little Bird Told Me, which is a nationally syndicated column, for about the last 10 years. She is a mother. In fact, she's the mother of an aspiring actor, a professional actor, Jason J. Delmonico. And she's going to come on our program to talk about, I guess, that separation, right, Margaret, that one feels, the panic, and how a mother does deal with that?
Well, Phil, first of all, I want to tell you, bravo to you. You made a very, very good point. The reason why the mother isn't there is because she's going through an emotional roller coaster. I'm going to be writing about the Elizabeth Smart case. And the fear that you do feel, the mixture of emotions that you go through, my heart goes out to that family and the feelings that they are feeling, because it almost happened to me. And to my son, Jason J. Delmonico, he's 11 years of age. And
can you tell us about that?
Well, yes, because it happened about 2 years ago. He was 9. And we were over at the Sherman Oaks Galleria. And I walked into Saks Fifth Avenue to get some cufflinks for Frank, his 75th birthday, that was coming up. And you look up, and suddenly they are gone. I couldn't see my son anywhere. The first thing you do is you scream at the top of your lungs. You scream your child's name. That was the very first thing I do. And that's the initial instinct of every mother, to just scream his name. Oh, my God, where is my boy? Oh, my God, please, God, don't let any harm befall him. And
it's a panic time, then, I guess.
It is very in panic, very panic. And anyone who's ever lost a child at the mall, you know the sensation, because what happens, Phil, everything goes into slow motion, and then your peripheral vision goes. You can hear your own heartbeat. You can hear your own breathing. And so it is a terrible panic.
All right, so you lost... Hold on for a minute. I got to pick my...
Phil?
Yeah, I'm right here. I just was picking up my pen. So you lost your son. Tell us about that panic, and I'm assuming you found him, obviously.
Oh, yes, we found him in a couple of hours, though.
2 hours.
2 hours. Let me tell you something. After the initial panic wears off, you jump into action. I ran up and down the corridors and up and down the mall from kiosk to kiosk. Now, the thing you should do is attract as much attention as you can. Scream your child's name, because time is of the essence. I went to security. I remember I talked to a couple of the security men. They asked me what he looked like. And when you're in that state, remember that you forget what your child looks like. They asked me, what does the boy look like? And I said to them, I'm in a state of shock. I don't understand your question. And
are you saying that when a mother loses a child, she is so shocked, she doesn't know what the child looks like, or she just can't describe it?
No, you forget what your child looks like. You're in shock. This is probably one of the problems that they're having in this child's case in Utah. I'll never forget. There was an Orange Julius stand, and I went over to the microphone that they use to announce that a table is ready. And I had already alerted security. I talked to some of the kiosk people. I grabbed the young man behind the counter, and I felt so bad about it, but I literally grabbed him by the shirt, and I pulled him out of the booth, and I went to the microphone. I was fumbling with the on switch, and I got on, and I said, excuse me, my name is Margaret Gray. And
now, Margaret, I want to be clear. You're announcing this to the whole mall?
Just to the food court, where you can hear the announcements, yes. And people looked up. I said, I'm Margaret Gray. My son is Jason J. Delmonico. He has appeared in a number of commercials that you might have seen. I mentioned that he'd been in a Blue's Clues and a voiceover in Rugrats. I said, I need your help desperately. My son is missing somewhere here in the mall. And I'm remembering it now, Phil.
I understand. It's emotional. I mean, my wife told me about losing the kids.
I said, I need your help desperately. I've got a 4 o'clock facial and an upper colonic at 6. I'm interviewing Gavin McLeod. And I kept repeating, I'm interviewing Gavin McLeod, and all of this is racing through my mind. So I look at the clock. He's been gone almost 2 hours. And let me tell you something, Phil. It's at this point you realize all of your priorities. You start thinking about the money that you spent on singing lessons, the braces, the acting lessons, the agent commissions. You begin to understand how much you have invested in this child. 15% that we make from his trust in is empowering our retirement. The fact that I almost died giving birth to him, all of this is running through my mind.
Hold on, Margaret. I want to hear the end of this story, but I want to give our number out. 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. Margaret Gray is talking to us about almost losing her son, the actor Jason J. Delmonico, at the Sherman Oaks Galleria. Now, you grab a microphone, you announce who you are.
And Phil, I can tell you something. When I was just mentioning the money that I had invested in him and the money that Frank and I have had invested in him, the acting lessons, the braces, we did a little work on his face. All of a sudden, the boy is gone, and you think of all that money, and the boy being gone, my God, it was like the stock market crashing. It was literally like the rear end coming out of every investment you ever made. And I'm in panic.
All right, you're in panic, and you've made that announcement. Now what happens?
All right. All of a sudden, I look up, and there he is, standing at the window of a Radio Shack with a big Jamba Juice cup. And I feel myself go weak.
I can imagine how emotional it was.
I feel myself go weak. I run over there, and every parent can relate to this. When you finally find a lost child, when you finally find that child, you want to reinforce in that child how serious it was. And I was absolutely beside myself, but I had the presence of mind to close my fist. I hit him a shot right in his mouth, and I told him, do you realize what you have done? Now, this is the time for tough love, Phil, and that's why when you love your child, you...
You struck him?
This is tough love. Now, hold on for a minute. This is tough love, and this is what saves a child's life. This is a time to let them know that they jeopardize themselves and other people. Tough love means you drill into them that they never, ever... go off like that again. And I split his lip, but I'll tell you this. Every time he looks in the mirror and he sees the scar from the 3 stitches they took to sew his lip back on, he remembers the angst he put us through. I should put him in a safe, but he's a human being, obviously, and this is tough love.
All right, now, the boy was there. He had gotten himself a Jamba Juice. He was standing at...
But keep in mind, Phil, he'd been gone for 2 hours, and he wasn't supposed to be.
But you ran up to him, and you hit him.
You're a stepfather, right?
Yes.
All right. You've never had children of your own?
No, ma'am, I haven't.
All right. Then you don't really understand the dynamic and what happens. The first thing you do is you run up to that child, and you say to them in no uncertain terms, don't you ever do that again. And I closed my fist. Some women will use the open hand. Some people will spin them around and yank their pants down and tan their hides right there in front of a mall full of people. But what I did... And I remember I was wearing my wedding ring, and I was wearing my engagement ring with a big thick stone on it. I hauled back, I closed my fist, and I hit him a shot right in the jaw. And I'll tell you something, he fell back on his rear end, crying, but he'll never, ever do that again. And I don't know how the smarts are dealing with this, but the first thing any parent that I know of will do is when that child comes home, you smack 7 shades of crap out of them, and they know that they are loved.
All right, hold the line here. 1-800-449-8686. Margaret Gray, a syndicated columnist, writing about the smart case, and point of fact, writing about her experience losing her son in a mall 2 years ago. He was gone for 2 hours. She had no idea where he was. She went up to a variety of security people. At one point, she went over to one of those microphones that they use in restaurants to tell you that your table is ready and made an announcement to a food court that it was Jason J. Delmonico, who is a recognizable actor. Where is her son? She didn't know. And she said she suddenly looked up, and there he was, standing by himself. And it was at that point that she ran over to him and hit him in the mouth with a closed fist. Now, she calls this tough love. Hey, Margaret, am I right? You call that tough love?
I told that boy loud and clear. Now I've missed my facial, my upper colonic, and I'm sure as hell is going to be tough getting to Marina Del Rey for that interview with Gavin. I took all my rings off of one hand, and I put them on the striking hand. That's how much I needed to give him the message. This is tough love.
Wait a minute. You took all the rings. What'd you hit him with, the right?
I hit him with my right hand, yes.
So you took all the rings off your left hand and loaded up your right hand?
Yes, absolutely. You know, the questions you ask show me that you're not really a fun...
You loaded up your right hand with rings and clocked him in the mouth.
It's tough love, Phil, and we need more tough love.
All right, hold on. 1-800-449-8686. My wife and I, my wife doesn't strike kids, but then we've never lost a kid in the mall. 1-800-449-8686. So she took all of the rings off her left hand, put them on the right hand, loaded it up brass knuckle style, and clocked the kid straight in the jaw because he'd been missing for 2 hours, gone off without her permission. 1-800-449-8686, The Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
All right, we're talking with Margaret Gray, nationally syndicated newspaper columnist, and the victim herself, I guess, if you would say, of a child gone missing. Margaret's on the line with us from her office in Santa Monica, California.
And Phil, I wanted to jump in and say that there have been a number of children that have gone missing these days. Tough love, that is what these parents have to have. And my son, Jason, has a 14-carat reminder of tough love. There is a scar along his upper lip, which I split open myself, and I had a right hand loaded with rings, but every time he looks at his face, he'll remember that better to have that scar than to be carried off in a van by some garbage, some jail garbage, some con man, God knows what, and we never see him again.
It's the belting the kid that gets me. And it's the idea of...
Phil, I had three separate appointments.
Well, that's the other thing, too, these appointments that you had. You had a high colonic, a facial, and an interview with Gavin McLeod.
Yes, that's exactly right. Where does this boy get off trifling or manipulating my career, going off and getting a Jamba Juice? He is lucky that all I did was get him in the mouth. I really thought about using my foot, too. That's how angry I was, but it's tough love that always wins.
All right, 1-800-449-8686. Don, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Is it Phil or Bill?
Yeah, my name's Phil, Don.
Phil, thank you.
Yes, sir.
I'm 70 years old. I have never called to a talk show in my life. I'm working in my office in my home, and I happen to have the radio on, and I heard this bizarre woman.
Can you do me a favor,
is,
Don?
Can
you, Don, you need to do me a favor.
Believe
oh, no. Don,
that,
you need to turn your radio down, Don. Turn your radio down, buddy.
Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah,
okay.
No problem.
Did he call me bizarre? Or?
Well, he's saying that you're bizarre.
I cannot believe that anyone would, I don't know how old she is, I cannot believe that anyone
53
would,
years of age.
Would admit to wanting to bash their children in their mouth with a fist.
Wait a minute.
First of all,
the boy
if
ran
I
away.
Have had five children and eight grandchildren and one great-grandchild.
Good for you.
I cannot imagine when you lose a child for whatever the circumstances were for a matter of an hour or two that the first thing you wouldn't want to do is to love them. To hold
I love my boy.
And
I
to
love
whatever
my
the
boy.
Reasons were they went away, they were children. And for you to say on public radio, if you will, or on the radio, that you gave him all these different opportunities or whatever the hell it was,
yes,
excuse
I did.
Me,
yes,
and
I
you
did.
Were so concerned about a facial and interviewing somebody who obviously is a celebrity,
Gavin
and
McLeod.
All these things that jeopardized your career, you were not interested in that child at all.
Now, wait a minute. I'm entitled to
child,
respond.
Ma'am.
I'm entitled to respond.
But I'm not
time,
true.
Every time
I cannot. You should be arrested. If I am
how
in a mall or in a public place, and it's the most offensive thing to me to see a parent smack a child.
Well, you know,
we
you
don't
may not
do
believe in you may not believe in corporal punishment, but that's your choice, not mine.
It is my choice.
I do
but
believe.
But the thing that makes
child,
me offended by your conversation is you were so concerned about your facial, your interview with somebody named McLeod, etc.
Gavin
that
McLeod
just makes me sick.
Are you aware of who
I
Gavin McLeod
that your
is?
Your child had a damn good reason for getting away.
Are you aware of who Gavin McLeod is?
I could care less.
Well, then you've
your
never
child wanted, was lost.
One of the largest
you're sitting
running,
here on the radio telling how many thousands of listeners that your concern was about your career, not about the loss of that child.
I
think
high,
it's absolutely pathetic.
First of all,
I don't care to even converse with you, ma'am.
Oh, that's very,
sir, thank
well,
you
that's
for
very
taking
close-minded
my call.
Of you. Very close-minded of you. But I had a high colonic, that was scheduled for...
What is a high colonic?
It is a health treatment.
But what is that?
The colon is flushed by way of an enema.
Why don't you tell him?
I am telling him the colon is flushed by way of an enema, and it is a health treatment that I use for my skin, and it's one of the reasons why at 53, Don, I would think that I'd make your hands sweat.
No, you make my heart bleed because of the way you
discussed
in a disgusting manner what you did to your own child.
Well, look at
you should be arrested for this.
For what?
You should still be arrested for this.
For what?
And you're so concerned about a colonic treatment and Gavin McLeod?
Yes.
Well, you're unbelievably.
Look at Margaret.
Forced.
Margaret, were you concerned with the boy?
I never heard anything. It disgusted me so much to listen. I was working when I heard this.
Let me ask a question here, Don.
Yes.
Obviously, Margaret, you were concerned with the safety of your child.
Obviously, I was, but that's something that has completely missed this man. I was in a panic. First of all, I love my son. I almost died giving birth to him. Number two, yes, the money that we've got tied up in the acting lessons alone. The money.
How could you relate to acting lessons when you have a missing child?
Do you know?
How could you bring into your mind all these monetary things? My God, if I'd have lost one of my children, and we all have gone through this at my age, there were many times when you're in a department store or a grocery store, a child wanders out of curiosity when you turn your head.
Exactly.
The last thing I could possibly ever think of is wondering how much I spent on his braces or his acting lessons or his piano lessons.
I cannot conceive of that.
Need to examine your conscience, man, need some therapy.
The point is a child is an investment, like a car, like a building, like a...
A child is not an investment. A child is a gift of God, and it's a gift of love.
Of course he is.
It is not an investment.
What you want out of what you want to get back what you put in. Do you see what I'm saying? I've got tied up in this kid.
I can't even accept that conversation.
Don, I've got tied up in this kid.
You don't ever... What you invest in your child, ma'am, is love. You don't invest money. You may, as a matter of your responsibility, but a missing child
all
does not
right.
bring to your mind immediately
right,
how much you invested in that child.
Very
you
good,
need to
Dr.
examine
Biscaglia,
your conscience. How old is this boy now?
He's 11 years of age. He's very healthy. He's been in two...
But he's got scars that you say that he, every time he looks in the mirror, he remembers.
He just has a little tiny scar that when he looks, he knows he doesn't leave mommy ever again. And thank God I took out insurance on him, too. In fact, three days
before... Well, that was a good monetary decision.
That was...
It's a good investment,
yes. Yes, it certainly is. And the way it would pay off is if he died, right?
Or serious injury, yes.
Right, so that would be that would make you feel good, wouldn't it?
No, it would not, but you've got to think of the future. My husband, Frank, and I get 15% from his trust as an actor. We do manage his career.
All right, look, Don, thank you for your call. 1-800-449-8686, 1-800-449-8686. Margaret lost her son at the mall, and she clocked him in the mouth when he came back.
Now, Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686.
Talking with Margaret Gray, a nationally syndicated columnist, about losing a child, about lost children, about finding children, the panic that a mother feels in a mall when she loses a child. You lost your son, Jason J. Delmonico. He is an actor of some renown. He's 11 years of age at the Galleria. And you mentioned that the boy is a commodity.
No, I did not say that, Phil.
Well, you mentioned that the children are an investment.
Yes, I did say they are an investment. Any parent that doesn't see it that way obviously hasn't been a parent very long. A child, if you look at Jason J. Delmonico just from the standpoint of his life, swimming lessons. We send him to a private, exclusive West Side grammar school, $35,000 a year.
Good Lord, that's tuition?
You got it. And you're trying to tell me that I shouldn't get absolutely beside myself when that boy comes back after wandering off and, oh, Mommy, hi, how are you? You were gone for 2 hours. I did what I had to do. It's tough love to rear back and take a shot. And I got to tell you something, Phil. I took martial arts when I was in school. And it was a healthy shot, but I held up a little bit because I knew he was a lot smaller than me. But when you think of the swimming lessons, the acting lessons, the braces, the emergency room visit that we had to make to sew that lip together. And it,
you don't see that as your making?
No, he did that. And tough love is expensive. And I sat him down and I said, Jason, darling, Mommy and Daddy have spent almost $1 million on you. But what are we getting? What do we get? You have to begin to return the investment. That's why when you go out on auditions and you are in different TV commercials, do your best.
So that Mommy and Daddy have the...
No, so that we can be proud of them.
1-800-449-8686. Pam, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Hi.
Yes.
I'd just like to say that I feel like this was malicious and intentional child abuse.
Oh, well, that is so Oprah of you, but I'm afraid you're not really seeing the whole picture.
Well, I do see the whole picture. I happen to have three very successful daughters.
But that's very Oprah.
And I have five grandsons, a granddaughter, and I have never, not ever, intentionally taken rings off of my hand, put them on the other hand, and hit that. I would not do that to my dog.
My son, Jason J. Delmonico, is a very well-known young actor, so I think that...
And that's the only thing that's important to you.
No,
that's the only thing.
No, but I think...
Look in the mirror and see how much bigger you are than him.
Listen,
and then you hit him?
All I
how
have...
How would you like it if somebody that much bigger than you hit you?
If I was 9 years old and I ran off, I would hope that they would hit me so hard that my jaw would be dislocated.
I would hope that when he gets old enough, he takes that silly little 15% that you're getting from him and sue you for every dime.
You know something, Pam? You love to pass judgment on me. How many TV commercials have your kids been in?
Now we know.
Yeah.
No,
right.
You're right. Now we know.
Now we know.
You're in it for the commercials. You're not in it.
I'm saying that I think that my son's life is a little bit more valuable from that standpoint than your children.
I don't think so.
That's why.
How can you say that?
It's obvious that there is more money tied up in Jason J. Delmonico's career than whatever she's got. So
whatever she's got.
You don't even have an ounce of love compared to the love that my kids have.
Look,
and my grandkids.
With your little herd.
You are so full of it.
No, I'm sure you're very happy, but I have...
I am absolutely ecstatic, and I'm very proud of my kids, and I don't ever want to take any money from them, and every dime I've got, I've invested in them, and I love them, and I will give them everything, and I don't expect anything in return.
You say that until you start wetting yourself, and you need to move into the room over the garage. Then you'll think differently, all right? And until that day comes around, I think that you should remember what I said. You pluck that kid, and if he thinks about wandering off, show him your ring.
If I had seen you pluck that kid, I'd have called the police.
And what? You're going to call the... You're interfering in me. You would interfere with a mother.
Yeah, I would. Because that's not only abuse, it's assault.
Isn't that PC of you to interfere with a mother doing tough love? You know what tough love is?
Maybe it is. It might be PC, but it's moral and it's right.
You are
wrong to hit your child like that.
I'm not saying that you can't swat him on the butt once in a while.
What I am saying is you don't take your big fancy ring that you're talking about and put several of them on a hand and then knock him across and put stitches in his face. You are absolutely ludicrous.
My son went off for 2 hours and scared me to death. My husband, Frank, gave me a beautiful 3.5-carat stone for our engagement ring. And let me tell you something, it comes in mighty handy when a kid thinks that he's 18 and only nine.
I'm really glad.
It comes in handy when a kid is 9 going on 26. And Pam, you look cute at the old folks home gumming your pork because the herd couldn't afford to put a tooth in your mouth.
Hey, sweetie,
oh,
you don't know how much money I have.
You know, Margaret, you don't have to be that insulting.
Oh, she's telling me how to be a mother. She's telling me how to keep my child safe. My child, safe. Do you know have you ever heard the name Elizabeth Smart? Do you know the name Moxley? Do you know the name Danielle Van Damme? Good God, woman. Children are dying.
And your point is?
Hello?
Hello?
I'm done.
I know you're there, Pam. Are you there,
yes,
Margaret?
I'm sick of it.
Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Well, then go back to the phone.
No. I'm sick of it.
Well, I guess she doesn't want to come back to the phone.
I guess not.
You're right. I've been treated with disrespect.
goodbye.
Sounds like she's hitting the phone now.
Are you trying to hang up?
I've hung up.
No, you haven't hung up, because I'm still talking to you.
Please tell the cow to quit laughing.
Don't call her a cow.
I'm asking the cow on the other end to quit laughing.
Don't call the woman a name. You don't want to be on the phone? Hang up.
There.
There what?
She's hitting the phone with a ring.
All right, is it hung up?
No, it's not.
$3,000 phone.
I'll see you later, Pam.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye. Oh, hang it up, will you? 1-800-449-8686. You're listening to The Phil Hendry Show. And we'll be right back.
This is The Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686.
And I've never been so insulted in my life, but I do want the name of your employer as soon as we conclude this phone conversation.
That's fine. You can have it. 1-800-449-8686. Tom, go ahead.
Bitch, you need your damn head examined. I've been a parent for 19 years.
What did you just call me?
I called you a stupid bitch.
Well, you dirty,
anybody that will abuse their kid like you have,
you know something. At least I don't go to bed with him like you do, Tom.
Wait a second.
If he comes out of the gate calling me the B word, let me tell you something. The gloves come off.
All right, can we start all over again here?
No, I was raised as abusive kid by my father. All he knew was his fist. I swore I'd never do that to my kids, and I haven't.
Dumb. Guy used that.
Yes. He's a sheet-wearing Klan, corncob pipe-smoking Beverly Hills. Oh, that dude, you dirty.
All right. Well, that was really great. Was that my wife again?
She's going to bingo.
She's going to bingo?
Yeah.
Can I call out in here?
Yeah.
I can? How do I do it? Here, I'll call my wife.
Go ahead and dial it, the number.
All right. Hold on, folks. There, I just dialed it.
Okay. I'll tell you when it's ringing.
Okay. Oh, she's at home. It's an 818 number, too. Let me try it again here.
Hi, sweetie.
Hey, baby.
I'm sorry. How's it going?
It's fine. We're on the air right now, live on the Phil Hendry Show, coast to coast. But because I didn't call you during the break, you're going to bingo?
Yes.
Okay, doll. I'm sorry I forgot to call you.
That's okay. But I just wanted to know, did you want me... Catherine's coming with me. Are you okay with Catherine and I, or do you want me to have Stuart drop me off?
No, that's cool.
Which?
No, that's cool. Catherine's coming with you?
Yeah.
All right. Well, let me know how you're doing.
Okay.
Right. Oh, hold on for a minute, honey.
Okay.
What, David?
Yeah, I'm going to be meeting your wife there.
That's fine. Thank you. All right. Okay, doll, what time are you guys coming home?
Always a pleasure to talk with you, David.
Yeah, well, he's...
It was a pleasure to talk to you, Maria. You know, your husband's drinking.
Yeah, thank you. So what time are you guys coming home?
We should be home 10:30.
All right, doll.
Okay.
Love you.
Thanks, baby. Love you.
All right,
you
see you later. Bye. There you go. I mean, she called me twice, and so there it is. All right, now... thank you, Margaret, for your whole lot of nothing. 1-800-449-8686. I want to just step into this as lightly as I can. Well, first of all, I want to tell you about our website, and then I have a couple of things I want to mention. Our website is philhendryshow.com, and we're very excited these days about the Phil Hendry Show website, philhendryshow.com, because in addition to all the classic comedy you get on our program, it's all archived there. Our 30-day archive, every single show we've done for the last 30 days, all the audio, short-form and long-form bits that we've done, it's all there, and it goes back like 8 years in some instances. Besides all of that marvelous stuff in our webcast archive, we also have the Phil Hendry Show souvenir shop, and we're slowly but surely, slowly and carefully, getting newer and newer items into the store. For instance, for you men about town, you want to look good just lounging by the pool, something you can throw on with a pair of slacks or a pair of shorts. Yes, it's the Teds of Beverly Hills bowling shirt. The Teds of Beverly Hills bowling shirt is a shirt based upon Ted Bell, who is the owner of Ted's of Beverly Hills Steakhouse in Beverly Hills, a frequent guest on our program. The big Ted's of Beverly Hills insignia is on the back, along with an insignia over the left breast. The shirt comes in a royal blue and black, 65% polyester, 35% rayon, comes in all the men's sizes from small to extra, extra large, and the orders are shipped from between 2 and 4 weeks. So go into our souvenir shop and pick that up. Maybe you want something a little bit more casual. Maybe you want something you could just sort of lay around by the pool in. Well, then you want the Jay Santos Citizens Auxiliary Police T-shirt. It's black with a silver Citizens Auxiliary Police badge over the left breast and the slogan, "We take a peek over the shoulder of the police," on the back in silver. And you can dry your car with it if you don't like the shirt once you get it. But in any event, it's a very nice, heavyweight, 100% cotton. And again, it comes in all the men's sizes, small, medium, large, extra, extra large. Again, orders ship between 2 to 4 weeks. And if you'd like to get caught up on your Best of the Phil Hendry Show CDs, we have a link to My Friend's Place, which is a resource center for homeless and runaway kids in Hollywood. And My Friend's Place benefits from the sale of our CDs, and they have for the last 6 years. So please pick up either our Best of the Year 2001, 2000. We've got it 99, 98, all the way back to 97. And again, that's $20, $350 shipping and handling. And they're pretty good over at My Friend's Place, shipping out our Best of CDs. So you see, our website has something for everybody, including our wall of female listeners. Don't miss that. And take a look at pictures of all 18 women that listen to my show. Yes, our radio program does very well, but it's mostly men, and we only have 18 women listening to it, and it's the only show that posts the pictures of all of their female listeners right on their website. So check out their faces as well as our Phil Hendry diary. Oh, my God, I forgot my diary for this week. Oh, well. In any event, when I get that updated, check that out. It's all there on the Phil Hendry Show website, philhendrieshow.com. You know, I'm very happy that Siamese twins are, you know, more successfully than ever before getting separated. But every time there's a Siamese twin in the news, there's a Siamese twin in the news. That's what basically what I'm saying. You notice that every week? Siamese twins who were joined at the leg are, okay, there we go. Siamese twins joined at the head. And there's Siamese twins that are joined at the neck and Siamese twins, and they're always doing some Siamese twins thing. Occasionally, there's one or two here in the States, but it's mostly like in Thailand or India where the doctors are working on separating Siamese twins. Now, am I right or am I wrong when I say that Siamese, there have been a few in down through history who actually got along very well and lived to old age together? I guess if you're joined at the head, though, it don't make much sense. I don't think you can. But the poor little guys, I mean, I suppose it calls attention to a malady that needs attention drawn to it. But the number of Siamese twins that are born in the world, in relation to, let's say, men with prostate cancer, women with breast cancer, and all of the other things that I'm sure you've heard many, many times before, need the attention of the health services. Never do you really get the... There's a guy with prostate cancer in Dallas. Here's a picture of Bob Johnson's testicles, and doctors successfully... They don't really have that, you know. It's just, I guess there's too many of them, and I can certainly understand the need to... You know, you can't publicize your last one, but the Siamese twins, man, they get, per capita, Siamese twins get more attention medically than any other malady in the history of the world. Pretty soon, they're going to have the Siamese twin thing down so good it'll be an outpatient procedure. Just coming, well, we're joined at the head. All right, go on, get in there. The operation to separate these poor little guys right now is going to cost $1.5 million. In about, 100 years, it'll be like $50 to go in and get your head separated because you were born Siamese twins. 1-800-449-8686. Then the other thing, you got to hear this story. Craig Taylor, who's my engineer, was flying to Japan 2 weeks ago, Craig? About a week and a half ago. He's going to visit his girlfriend, Nikki, and they land in San Jose, and then they're going to take a nonstop from San Jose to Narita, which is the airport for Tokyo. They get about an hour outside of Seattle, and the pilot comes on and says, probably in the way that pilots do it, "All right, folks, we got a little bit of a problem up here, so we're going to turn around and head on back to Seattle Airport, and it's okay. It's not that big of a problem. It's no big deal. We're going to head on back." Then in about 5 minutes, the guy comes back on. "Say, listen, folks, we're going to have to dump fuel, and..." So now the guy's vacation has turned into a nightmare as the pilot is winging the plane back to Seattle, dumping fuel all the way. They land in Seattle, they have to spend the night in Seattle, and they have to jump another plane, and they fly, I guess, from Seattle all the way to Tokyo. Now, here's the thing with that. Number one, he's a day late for his vacation. Number two, can you think of a more stressful way to start a vacation than a pilot saying, "Well, we'll be dumping fuel on our way back"? I would have been drinking everything they had in that little rolling mini bar. Is there any one of these? Boy, no wonder they serve booze on planes. And apparently, they finally get back on the plane in Seattle. They fly to Narita, and Craig's talking to somebody from the airline. They said, "Well, it was a fuel what? Fuel flow problem." Oh, that's one you want to have when you're right out over the North Pacific. God. Good thing you are just chill, man. You know, I mean, if it was me, I'd be probably crapping on the drink cart like that one guy did that time. That's what I would be doing. Unbelievable, dude. What a way to start a vacation. "Hi, everybody. I know you want to go on your vacation, but let's turn around and go back to the airport we just left, and let's dump fuel while we're doing it. And, oh, yeah, put your tray tables up and bend over and take all the sharp objects out of your pocket. Thank you." It's Phil Henry Show. Federal investigators have concluded that the Forest Service employee charged with starting a fire that has burned more than 100,000 acres in central Colorado set the blaze deliberately and lied that she touched it off accidentally by burning a letter inside a campfire ring, according to a senior Forest Service official. Now, that certainly changes things. It changes it from a fire that might have been started purely by accident to one that might have been started on purpose. And what does that mean? We wanted to get Paul Lane on with us. Paul is a former wildlife and conservation analyst and consultant with the U.S. Forestry Service. Paul, you also did some time as a doing fire watch?
Yes, in the Pacific Northwest and also in the Smoky Mountains in the Southeast. I was on fire watch during summer months when I was in school in the mid-1980s.
Tell me about an individual that would start fires on purpose. Do they want attention?
Well, I can tell you about a person that would start a fire on purpose who is a Forestry Service employee. And
all right, somebody who works for the Forestry Service, especially somebody who works for the Forestry Service.
Well, it is a strange thing to do, considering that we are people who are devoted to the preservation of wildlife and the conservation of our natural resources. But I think that in many ways it's job stress. If you live in a city, the city belongs to you. If you live in the country or you live in the woods, it is foreign to you. You are a visitor. I think what happened to this individual is that she got tired of being a stranger out there.
What do you mean by a stranger?
Well, it's not a natural place for a human to be. Most of us are from city environments. When you're out in the wilderness, you are out in an area where animals are the king, so to speak. A wild animal in the city is going to back down the minute you say boo or the minute you run at them. But out in the woods, a wild animal will actually stare right back at you and not budge. A wild animal will walk into your campsite. A wild animal pretty much has the run of the area because that's their habitat. And I've had caribou, I've had deer, a lot of these larger animals staring right back at me if I've been out in the campsite, if I've been on the job.
You had a caribou or a deer stare back at you? What do you mean?
I've had, in other words, if I've seen a caribou or a deer come into the campsite, and they'll look at me, and I'll stare right back to try to scare them, and they'll keep staring, and there's a side of you or there's a part of you that feels almost used or disrespected by the environment.
Well, okay, all right, a sense that you're being disrespected by animals sounds a little bit extreme.
Well, no, I understand, Mr. Henry. It is something that most people don't quite get, and it sounds unusual, but animals will challenge you in their habitat. And
but what does all of this have to do with a woman starting a fire?
Well, I'm saying on-the-job stress is derived from being in an environment where you don't have a lot of respect, especially from the wilderness. I'll give an example of what I mean. When I was working Fire Watch, and this was in the Smoky Mountains back in the early 1980s, I had carved an American Eagle out of some soft wood that I'd found. I had stained it, and I'd put some lacquer on it, and I set it outside the Fire Watch station I worked in. And the next morning, I come out there to find it had wolf urine all over it. Now, the wolf had come in the middle of the night and tried to mark it as territory. So you see, they'll rob you of your dignity, rob you of everything. I look at the Colorado fire, and I feel like hell for what is happening. But let's not lose sight of Terry Barton and the abuse that she probably had to live with day in, day out at the hands of animals.
All right, our number is 1-800-449-8686, 1-800-449-8686. Are you justifying her starting this fire?
No, sir, I'm certainly not doing that.
All right, but you're saying that she might have started the fire, if she started the fire, and this is all alleged, because she felt disrespected by animals.
Human beings are the top animal on the food chain. Human beings are the most intelligent creatures on the face of the earth, and they are the obviously most accomplished creatures. When a human being goes into an environment where suddenly he is not the smartest and the animals are not giving respect.
Well, you say you had a wolf urinate all over something that you had carved.
To mark its territory and to show me who is boss. And I took that, and I can tell you it hurt. Now, they'll cop an attitude because they're out in their own habitat. They know they can't be shot. They know they can't be captured. The rumor is that Terry, the day before, she's alleged to have started the fire because she had an altercation with a caribou that was copping some.
Now, this is Terry Barton you're talking about, the woman who was alleged to have started the fire.
That is correct. Now, this is just a rumor. I don't know if it's true, but apparently she come up against a caribou. It was mating season. I think we've all heard that she's overweight. This caribou apparently tried to make a mating move on her, held her hair down with a hoof, and she got away. But I imagine that would piss her off. And
in other words, a caribou tried to mount her?
That is, I can tell you that that is something that would be humiliating.
But are you for sure that's what you heard? That Terry Barton, a caribou, tried to mount her, and that...
That would send you around the edge. I think it would send you around the edge, wouldn't it?
Okay.
Now, if a deer or a buck tried to mad dog me, I wouldn't set fire to a forest, but I would damn sure make sure that deer remembered my name.
When you say a deer or a buck mad dogs you, are you talking about them staring you down?
Staring you down, yes, sir. A deer, a caribou, a raccoon, any animal that mad dogs you takes away some of the self-respect you have as a human being. If you're out in the wilderness and you are out in the forest and that is not your home habitat, those animals, whether it be a bear, it could be an otter, a lot of the animals that have an aggressive nature are the smaller animals. Otters, raccoons, prairie dogs, and these things will mad dog you, or what I say, stare you down. And that robs you of your dignity. And so I can well see Terry Barton, this caribou mad dogger, try to mount her. Terribly humiliating and horrible. And I could see she probably just had enough and set fire to the forest.
But she's a conservationist. She should be mindful of the love.
I love animals, too, but there are times I'm sick of them, you know. I love animals. I love wildlife. But there are times I hate them so very much because of the things they've put me through and the humiliations that I've experienced at their paws or at their hands. They've humiliated me. So there are times I wish they'd all die.
Even though you're a conservationist, you're saying that you would wish all animals would die because of the humiliation that they put you through.
That is correct. And what I'm saying is this could have happened to this Terry Barton. Now, if you can imagine the disgust you'd feel if a moose tried to climb on your back and give it to you, or however it tried to do it to her.
I wouldn't want to set fire to a forest. I mean, I think you'd have to be unbalanced in the first place to set fire to a forest, regardless.
Well, I can't speak for Terry's reasoning, but sometimes women in the Forest Service don't have the power to combat this kind of intimidation, so she fought back, you know, the only way she could. If you're a woman in the workplace and you're harassed, and you're intimidated.
Yeah, but she's being intimidated, according to you, by caribou, moose, raccoon.
That is correct, but still, it is an intimidating place to be. Now, it gets back to the herd, and that they got a punk working at the ranger cabin. It is a relentless...
Yeah?
It is a relentless parade of animal hostility and harassment.
All right, let's give our phone number out one more time here. 1-800-449-8686. The Colorado fire continues, and there are several of them. The Hayman fire is alleged to have been started by this Forestry Service employee named Terry Barton. We're talking with Paul Lane, who's a former wildlife consultant and conservationist. He says that it's possible she started this fire as the result of anger toward the wildlife. Caribou, deer, raccoons, or any other wildlife around there that apparently doesn't treat the humans with enough respect. It is a foreign environment for human beings. It is an environment that is much more comfortable for animals. And apparently she was angry at the animals and decided to set fire to their habitat, according to him. It's all about respect. It's all about having self-respect and not wanting to be intimidated or abused by wildlife. 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Hendry Show.
Here's Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686.
With me is Paul Lane, who is a former conservation consultant and wildlife expert, about the Colorado fires, which are out of control. It's a disaster, and it's a horrible thing. And you're not trying to excuse this woman from if she has started these fires.
No, sir. I think I've made it very clear, Mr. Hendry. I do not excuse anybody from destroying the habitat. I'm trying to give you an insight into the thinking and the mindset of a conservation worker or forestry worker who finds himself outside of the normal bounds of urban life and finds himself in the wildlife where it sometimes can be intimidating because you are surrounded by, first of all, you're not surrounded by humans. You're surrounded most of the day by animals, and that is their habitat. You feel that you're the number one animal, and the next thing you know, you've got animals. And if you can imagine for a minute an animal messing with your mind, or an animal,
but they're not doing it on purpose.
The animal has an instinct at dominance. All right, like the wolf that urinated all over that eagle that I carved. The message was very clear to me that this is his territory, and if I want to create anything lifelike or human, the wolf will humiliate me.
But humiliation is, it seems like you're anthropomorphizing these animals, giving them human traits.
Well, you go out in the wild long enough, and you have one of these deer, you look at a deer, and you got a rifle pointed right at it, and it's staring at you. Now, that's a statement by that animal that you can go straight to hell, if you'll pardon my language.
All right, 1-800-449-8686. Ray, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Yeah, I'd like to talk to that gentleman speaking about animals.
Yes, sir, it's Paul Lane.
Yes, how you doing, sir?
Fine, sir.
I'm from Little Rock, Arkansas, and we do quite a bit of hunting and fishing here. And my friend, I have to tell you that you are completely wrong.
Well, sir, I'd like to know what your experience is in the
I've hunted and fished all my life, and
I'm wrong about what? Be specific.
Well, about a caribou trying to mount a woman.
That was anecdotal. I don't know if that's true or not.
That's ridiculous.
What I'm trying to say is, you can imagine how humiliating that would be.
My friend, a caribou, once they see a human being, will run away instinctively.
In mating season?
Sir, in mating season, especially. Because that is when the hunting season starts.
Well, why did we get, and this was on a couple of websites, that she was humiliated by some kind of an animal?
How can you let an animal humiliate you, sir?
I'm saying, sir, not that the animal would on purpose, but if an animal tried to mount you for mating purposes,
I think... that is laughable.
I think you would be embarrassed, wouldn't you?
Sir, that is laughable.
Well,
now, I have seen...
Can I jump in?
Sir, these animals in National Forest know...
sir, excuse me.
First of all, you can't shoot an animal in a national forest, Ray, so I'm
No, no, I'm afraid you're wrong, sir. Because we do shoot animals here in Arkansas in a national forest every year. It is allowed by law.
Well, during the season, yes.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Now,
allowed by law.
Now, that's early fall.
Now,
now,
could you tell me why a caribou would try to mount a woman or even look at a woman in that way when it's not hunting season? Could you tell me that, sir?
Well, I'll tell you this. It was anecdotal information.
Okay.
I don't know whether it's true or not.
You're trying to say that caribou scared her down.
If a caribou mad dogs you, that's not going to make you angry?
Mad dogging me, meaning?
Meaning staring you down.
Staring me down. Well, you know, I guess I will run, but I don't think I'll start a forest fire.
Well, here's the thing. When you say mad dogging, you mean the animal is staring the human down to intimidate?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Is that what you mean?
That's what I mean.
Well,
I'm
yes, sir. I mean, you must have some sort of instinctual, you know.
I don't know what you're getting at.
You know, you need to.
What are you getting at?
I'm getting at what you're saying is totally preposterous. You're telling me that.
Jerry Barton had her hair held down by the hoof of a caribou.
Is that a fact?
If that's true, and I'm not saying that
is
that's
that
true.
Is that what she says?
That's what's the anecdotal information I'm getting. She was retaliating, and
now,
I'm not saying it's right.
By starting a fire.
Yes,
now,
sir. Yes, sir.
No, that is totally preposterous. I cannot see a caribou even getting anywhere near a human being. And this is where, in Colorado?
Yes,
there
sir.
There are no caribou in Colorado.
Well, some kind of an animal.
Okay.
No, no, wait a minute. Wait a second.
Wait a second.
Yes, there are caribou. There are caribou herds on federal reserves. Yes, there are, sir.
Well, maybe
yes, there
so,
are, sir. All right, sir.
Maybe
this is
so. But
this
is a federal reserve
we're talking
forest?
About. This is a federal reserve we're talking
okay,
about, sir.
We're not talking
yeah, well,
about
she's it. Charged with setting a fire.
Are we
in
talking
a,
about national forests or
well,
federal
she's,
reserve?
She's charged with starting a fire in a federal reserve.
That is correct.
Okay.
All right,
so
now.
So what you're trying
you,
to tell me.
I'm going to tell you, Ray, you know, and I believe you when you say you're a hunter. If an animal comes up to you trying to mount you,
my
I
friend,
think you, that'll make
you
angry.
I was sitting on the side of a dirt road one day while deer hunting.
Right.
A bobcat was running down the road. I looked at him. He looked at me. He was 10 feet away from me. I drew my gun up, and I looked at him and said, sir, you better turn around and run back up the road. You know what happened? He didn't attack.
He mad dogged you.
He turned around and ran back up the road, and that is a true story, my
well,
friend.
Now you're telling me you're talking English to an animal. That's
hey, that's exactly
say,
what he did because he knew that this was a this
yeah.
was not a forest animal. He needs it's something he's never encountered, and he needed to go away.
In other words, animals they know when a natural enemy is afoot, right?
An animal knows when a natural, but an animal also that's frightened. And that is perhaps out of
I will
normal
not
area.
Argue the point
we'll try
there
to mount
you,
a female human, and if I saw my wife getting mounted by a caribou,
now where do you
I'd
get
set
this
fire
mounting?
To.
Why do you keep going back to the mounting thing?
That's what she say happened. Now you've seen your old lady getting mounted by something.
You know, I really find that hard to believe.
Ask a lady who was mauled by
so,
the pit bulls. People
that
are
is
eaten
so
by cougars.
Laughable.
Ask any family who's lost a mother or a child to a cougar.
Do you know right. that is so laughable?
Well. Thank you very much.
A caribou mounting a woman?
Well, if it happened, it gives us a reason for why she started the fire.
I have
out of
it.
Retaliation.
I mean,
that
first
is correct.
Of all,
all right.
This is
all right, Ray, I got to run, all right? Thank you for your call, because Ray is an experienced hunter.
All those hunters, see, first of all, if you're a hunter, you don't know diddly squat about anything. All you know how to do is shoot a gun. You don't know nothing about no animal. You don't know nothing about how they... the habitations and all of the different things that you need to know.
All right, so that man who's hunted and fished his whole life...
Well, that's fine. So he knows how to hook a line, he knows how to load a gun, and run down the road wearing one of them plaid shirts and, you know, get up in a deer stand and pull out a flask of Southern Comfort. I mean, that doesn't mean that you're you know, what do you want to call a conservationist?
All right, let me go to here to Brian. Brian, you're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Yes, sir. I like to talk to that guy that's
yeah,
talking about...
Yeah, Miss Paul Lane, go ahead.
Paul Lane.
How you doing, sir?
I'm good.
Okay, how can you say that a woman, you know, having a deer like that mount her is going to make her settle fire?
Because I think the humiliation of having an animal want to give you, you know what I'm talking about, give you love.
Not
whatever.
Really.
It's not really love, but I mean, if an animal's trying to put it in up you, what... That's not going to piss you off?
Well, animals don't look at humans like that. I find it hard to believe.
So let's be clear here. She was out there, and you're saying it mounted her because she was fat.
I think it made, yeah.
No.
Here a caribou wants to mount her, and her husband doesn't, so she had problems, all right?
All right, so now she's angry, and she's so angry.
She decides to destroy all the animals. She'll kill them all. And I'm saying she's out of her mind. She's flipped. She flipped her lid.
We are trespassers, you know, basically in the wildlife.
Right, I agree.
And they won't look at you as a mating partner. They're looking at you as potential prey or predator.
Well,
okay.
That's why they're trying to mad dog her and make her feel bad.
No. They got
right.
Special scents that they can smell, if, you know.
And they'll look at you, and they won't stop looking at you until you feel like a piece of dirt.
No, forestry
workers are under a lot of stress. That's what I'm saying. Forestry workers are under a lot of stress. Most of them want to take it out on the animals. I've been a conservationist my whole life, and I love wildlife, but I'd kill them all for some of the things they put me through. See what I'm saying?
No, not really.
All right, Brian, thank you for your call. 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. Paul Lane, who believes that lady might have set that Colorado fire because she was tired of the humiliation she'd suffered at the hands of wildlife, including a caribou that tried to mount her. 1-800-449-8686. And Mr. Lane also made the very revealing comment. He loves wildlife, but he's sick to death of the abuse that he's taken at the hands or at the paws of them. This is the Phil Hendry Show.
One 800-449-8686. And now more on the Phil Hendry Show.
And with me is Paul Lane. He is a former conservation consultant, a wildlife expert on what might have prompted Terry Barton to allegedly start the forest fire in Colorado. She was a forestry technician, which means she should have some appreciation and love for animals and wildlife. But you say the pressure that,
and again, Mr. Henry, they're all under this kind of pressure.
There is pressure that these people feel because they're in a strange environment. The animals have no respect for them. And
after a while, you lose respect for yourself as well. And I'll tell you something. As I said, these hunters that hunter that I talked to last hour, they all think they know all about conservation. They don't know diddly squat about nothing about conservation because... one of the things they don't have to deal with, I'm a wildlife expert. I love animals. I personally don't believe in shooting them. But if you're a hunter and an animal stares you down or gives you some, you know, any kind of a wise-ass look, you could blow its head off. And for me, there are times that I wished I was a hunter. Because I get some smart-ass look from some squirrel or some animal, and there are times I want to take a .22 and just blow its head off, because it's...
All right, I understand. 1-800-449-8686. Mike, go ahead.
Yes, I just wanted to talk to this, I guess it's Mr. Lane?
Paul Lane, yes, sir.
Yeah, Paul Lane. You said that most hunters, they don't know much about the conservation or...
Not as much as some of
the animals.
Well, I mean, I spend my life trying to conserve them. Y'all, if you're hunters, spend your time trying to kill them. What's funny about that?
Let me tell you something. You tell me
that's not true?
No, that is totally not true.
What does a hunter do?
I'm not going to get in the shouting match, but,
all right, but
who's the one that gives the most to duck conservation?
To
duck
who?
Hunters. Duck hunters, when they pay for their stamps, when they buy their license,
well,
they're the ones that put more money into any one of your far-left conservative
all
hunters type of thing.
Well, you all
got to know a lot more about putting up a tree stand
right,
and how to fire a gun if they're going to hit anything.
Okay, you don't know enough about what an animal is thinking, okay, is what I'm saying. You know about how to put a stuffed head on your wall.
No, sir, you got to learn how to think like an animal to hit an animal.
All right.
Even learn where they're going to eat, what type of what type of habitation they like.
All right, and
for instance, like you get a mule deer. If you get a mule deer that's on the plains,
right.
It's a total different deer than if you get one that's in the mountains. It's
that's
in the
exactly
Sierra
what
mountains.
I'm trying to say. And when you have these animals that are around humans like that, smart ass or whatever you want to call it,
okay.
That's a totally different animal. Some of these animals, see what I'm saying? Now, have you ever come up against a deer that thinks it's better than you?
If it did, it died.
Well,
I don't play around.
All right,
usually, though, I don't have problems with animals. If they're going to see me, they know who I am and they leave. You know, but
they don't try to give you no mess.
Yeah, I don't try to build. You know, hey, I'm here. I love nature. Most hunters love nature. That's why they're out there in the first place.
But if an animal tried to smart-ass you or get wise with you, you'd blow its head off, wouldn't you?
Well, that would be actually the last resort. If I don't have a tag for it, obviously I'm not going to risk losing my gun license or anything like that. But usually there's other steps that you can take, and they're usually not going to...
All right,
animals as a whole don't bother. The ones that do, they're the ones that need to be killed.
But if a caribou comes up to you and climbs up your back and tries to turn you into its wife... You'd blow its head clean off, wouldn't you?
Most likely, but the thing would probably kill me if it got that close to me.
All right, well, I think this man knows what I'm talking about.
Wait a minute. Just so I'm clear, Mike, have you had an animal ever get smart-ass with you?
They've gotten close. Yeah, I've broke horses.
Right.
I've been out in the mountains.
Right.
Yeah,
right. There you go. And a lot of times you get a squirrel that'll stare you down and thinks it's better than you, trying to be cute, right?
Yeah.
And you want to kill it.
You know, usually, though, you stand up to it. I mean, it's going to move.
Well, that's the whole thing.
Because you're bigger than it.
That's the whole thing. Let me see. I get so pissed off at these animals that treat me like garbage. What do you like? You just agreed with me. Now you're laughing.
No, I agree.
See what I'm saying?
The thing is,
I get so
usually when they get smart off with me, I'll stand them up and then show them who's the boss. You
stand them right up and you'll blow their head clean off. And what I'm trying to do is, I can't stand the sons of bitches who smart-mouth me and...
Wait a second! Are these things human or are they animals?
They're animals.
Well, what do you mean smart-mouthing you?
Yeah, I hear you on that.
Have you ever had a beaver slap you around the head and neck with its tail?
No. I don't get that close.
All right. Listen, thanks, Mike, and I know what you mean about Ducks Unlimited, because...
here we go. Now you guys are going to have a little talk about...
Ducks Unlimited is a duck thing, and they...
They save ducks.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do.
Even the smart ass, even the ones that are wise ass.
Yeah, even the wise ass ones.
I'll tell you, I love animals, and I believe in the conservation of wildlife, but if an animal ever gets cute with me again, like this Morro Bay kangaroo rat did 6 months ago when I was up working at Morro Bay Conservation Area, and this thing tried to get wise ass with me, and I strangled it. Now, I have a technique...
Wait a minute, a Morro Bay kangaroo rat, isn't that an endangered species?
That is correct. But it got smart with me, thought it was going to mad dog me, thought it was going to mess with me, screw with me, and I put my hands around its neck and I strangled it. Now, I hunt with my bare hands. That's what I don't use guns. I strangle all the animals that I kill. And so...
Really?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, I do.
What animals have you killed?
You name it, deer, bear.
You strangled a bear?
Yes, I do. I get on its back, and I will strangle it. And I've strangled deer, bear, I've strangled caribou, raccoon. I hold them down and just strangle them. To me, that's the most merciful thing. But I will only do that to animals that screw with my head. I strangled an eagle one time. I beat the crap out of it, you know. Well. Okay.
Yeah, fine.
Is that it?
Yeah, that's it, man. He strangles all of the animals that he kills. Paul Lane, conservation expert. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show. Voice of Paul Lane was performed by me in that preceding bit, and I also did my own voice. And the people who called in thought he was a real guy. That's the Phil Hendry Show for you. where callers get no respect, but the audience, ultimately, we work hard to entertain. On yesterday's program, we continued to investigate, or we began our investigation, of the possible psychological causes of these Colorado fires. We talked with Dean Wheeler about the possibility that Terry Barton, if she set the fire, was a hurt human being, and what are the feelings of a human being against an entire forest? Wouldn't you, Mr. Hendry, he said, support the life of a baby over forests? Here was yesterday's bit.
Phil Hendry Show.
Comedy gold.
It's not only women who do dramatic things
when they're upset.
Men have killed their entire families to keep their wives from leaving them. But I'm more concerned about your equating the death of a baby with the loss of all the forests in the world. We have to realize that we're interdependent with other species.
What is your answer to that question?
We can't just give up.
Rocky, what is your answer to that question, Rocky? Would you see a baby die to save the forests, or would you save that baby for the forests?
I don't think the baby's life would be worth living without the forests on the earth.
So you would
vacuum, and it's not the same as aborting a baby.
Then you would also work
in an abortion clinic. It is not the same as aborting a baby.
You'd also be manning a vacuum at an abortion clinic.
No, you are totally off base with that.
That is really sick.
No, that is not the same thing.
No, both of you would man a vacuum at an abortion clinic because a child to you is dispensable. And the fact that you would take an ice pick and stick it into the brain of a child to save a cougar and a bush, to me, is absolutely reprehensible.
I would never do that. I would never take...
You just said that you would. You just said,
no,
I would never take an ice pick and stick it in a baby's neck. You're saying...
You said for the forests
of
the world.
You would destroy the earth. You would destroy the earth so that one fowl could have maybe a miserable life. I think this human...
Trees grow back, Rocky. Trees grow back.
You're totally ridiculous.
I'm ridiculous. You were the one who said you'd throw a child under the wheels of a truck.
No, I did not. You're lying.
She did not. Now that is a lie.
I did not say that.
Well, what is the difference? I want to know what the difference is. You both said you would sacrifice a child for forests.
You said you would gladly burn down all the forests in the world if it would save one child's life. Well, I don't know how you make that connection between that and stabbing a baby with an ice pick.
And Rocky and I both said that we didn't think the forests burning down. We wanted to save the forests because what would the life of a child...
And you chose the vacuum at an abortion clinic. All right. Thank you.
No, we did not.
Yes, you did.
Aborting a child does not save the forest. There's no equivalent there. You're making something up that doesn't even relate to reality.
The two of you said that you would gladly shove a child's hand into a garbage disposal.
No, we did not.
Phil Hendry Show.
Comedy gold.
Well, anyway, you got to have some kind of a problem to light fires. But, you know, the thing about fires is that every kid plays with matches. Every kid lights fires. I did. And I'm sure that you did. You mean you didn't? All right. Well, then I guess I'm out on a limb on this one. I burned down our family garage once. I told you we set fire to a car. No, I didn't burn down any garage. Although I did see a really cool episode on Cops where a guy burned down a friend's garage when he was trying to put a stereo in the guy's car. And it was a Cops episode. And the dude is on the ground and he's crying. He says, what are you doing?
I was just putting a stereo in his car. Next thing I saw, the whole house is on fire.
Well, what are you, an idiot? I mean,
I don't know how it happened.
I think anybody that lights fires is stuck in some period of childhood because that's what you do. Lighter fluid, everything. And this lady in Colorado, this is a whole new adventure in weird. So she set fire to the forest so people would dig her. That's the whole thing. People, they want attention. They want everybody to love them. They want them to think that they're a big hero. That's why they almost nailed that poor guy, that Richard Jewell. Remember that guy in the Centennial Park bombing in Atlanta in 96? They thought he was a guy looking to be a hero. And that he set the bomb himself, which of course was not the case. But in this case, that's the case. So get off my case. But you see, fire is fascinating to people. Fire was the first television set. We have a racial memory of fire. We honestly do. We have a memory of seeing the very first fire that we ever lit. And around that fire, we sat telling stories. The wise people would tell stories, and then they would talk about the hunt, and they would do all these things to, in other words, sort of inform everyone. So it's an archetype. Fire is an archetype. It's an archetype like mother. It's an archetype like snakes. We remember it. We have a racial memory of it. 1-800-449-8686. RC, go ahead.
I was interested in what you were saying about archetypes, and I think it's a very valid point you're making, Mr. Henry.
Well, thank you.
And I was wondering, is this an archetype? Oh, yeah, yep.
And anyway, so a lot of the, okay, fine, so forget it. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Yeah, I was thinking of...
Yeah, that's an archetype, man. Forget it. Connie Chung was at a fundraiser of some kind, and she was singing a song about being on CNN. And there's a photograph of Larry King standing behind her. I don't know if you can see this at home. There's a picture of Larry King looking as lascivious and foul as ever. God, does he look just like a predatory sexual pervert standing behind Connie Chung. He's got one hand on her shoulder. She's got the big grin. He's, ugh. Hey, Larry, you know, you don't have to be in every picture with every chick that CNN hires. You can just sort of back it off. And by the way, when you had Anna Nicole Smith on, leaning over and helping her with her necklace, what's that all about? He had Anna Nicole Smith on, and she couldn't unclasp some locket or some necklace that she was wearing. So the next thing you see are Larry's crone-like hands coming into the view of the camera as he's trying to help her unlock the locket, not 2 or 3 inches above, enormous, mountain-like, just the Carlsbad Cavern cleavage that she's got. And there's Larry's gnarled hands.
Let me help you with that, my dear.
Oh, God, I can't get the...
Allow me.
Next thing I see, a picture of him with Connie Chung. She's married, you old... She had a little fun Monday night at the Manhattan's 21 Club. They all got bombed. Jeff Greenfield was there, Larry King, Lou Dobbs, Aaron Brown. Aaron Brown, did you hear the latest from him? He thinks he's the face of CNN. He's all pissed off because they're doing the Blake trial. He's just all bummed out that he ain't doing that overnight show on ABC anymore or that he ain't Charlie Rose. God, I can't stand those guys. Him and that Paula Zahn. Forget it, honey. Cap teeth and all. I'm watching that blonde on Fox in the morning. That's way more entertaining. Although, what's up with Steve Ducey, the weather guy? Is that guy a journalist? Is he a weatherman? Is he a weatherist? Is he a journalman? Is he a commentator? He's just kind of the funny sidekick. They got three of them. You ever seen this show? Two of them look like fairly, literate journalists, although I wouldn't know. And then here's Steve Ducey, the weather guy, weighing in on car bombings. And, oh, yeah, it's going to be 85 degrees in Minneapolis today. Guys weighing in on car bombings, Arafat, what a bunch of dirtbags the Al-Qaeda is, and it'll be a nice day for surfing in Florida. I'm Steve Ducey, the weather guy. And then he comes off, and if that guy can make it on TV, by God, I can. Gives me hope. I flip over to Paula Zahn with those big teeth, bringing out a freaking bucket of apples for her. And then what do we got? Then after that, we got some other bullcrap. I forget. Sitting there talking about nothing. There's all kinds of stuff going on in the world. Why can't you cats get to it, man? I'm flipping on the news in the morning. I want to see all about that Al-Qaeda. I want to see all about what's going down in Palestine. I want to see all the stuff that's happening in Egypt. I want to know what's going down with the stock market. Bug off with all those human interest features these guys are doing. You ever taken anything away from one of those stories they do about some woman feeding ducks near a mill in Wisconsin and she suddenly changed the ecosystem around out there near the St. Croix River and, forget it. I'm Steve Ducey, the weather guy. Hey, it's going to be beautiful today in Denver. We're going to have about 65 degrees. All right, now there was another car bombing and let's do shtick. Good for Israel, by the way. They announced today, with every new car bombing, they'll take over another piece of the West Bank. With every new suicide bomb, homicide bomb, whatever you want to call it. It didn't take off, George. It was a good try. Nobody's saying homicide bomb. They're still saying suicide bomber. They're going to take over another piece. Another bomb goes off, then another piece. Another bomb goes off, then another piece. And so finally, those suicide bombers, boy, what brain surgeons they are. They ain't going to have nothing left. So then Israel will just be over there in the West Bank. Sounds good to me. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Hendry Show.